QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 147.330 megahertz, offset of 600 kilohertz plus, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Alrighty. And there, are there any bulletins, announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. Alrighty, hearing none, we have a few announcements here. Not this week, but probably starting in the next couple of weeks, we will have a little session we're going to do on EMP, electromagnetic pulse, send off a few things out there to some of our listeners and try to gather up a little information on that. And let's see, this upcoming Saturday, if you're up here in the Valley, please stop by, or if you're a member, please stop by also to the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club meeting. Club meeting is Saturday at 6:30 at the Big Bear Lake Fire Station. May you reset. Also, we did ham testing here yesterday, and we've got a couple of, Sunday. That's not yesterday. Got one new ham from Lucerne Valley and an upgrade from one of our other techs out there. So, and we'll be doing testing from here on out also on the last Sunday of every month, excluding December. We'll have to reschedule that one. Alrighty. We will also be having some workshops coming up, and we're going to start this year with some tech Tuesday workshops with Yagis. Do some work there. We'll announce that as we get further along, so get closer to probably the summer. And the topic for the evening, we're gonna explain a little bit about using a piece of coax to help your tuner tune in on the HF bands. And after that, we're gonna get into a little more detail and kind of rehash over transmission lines. Why is a transmission line a transmission line? Where does the antenna start? Why is that the antenna? Why is it not the transmission line? Stuff like that. This information is pulled from the Radio Amateur's Handbook and the Radio Amateur's Antenna Handbook that's published by the ARRL. Hey, call the roster here a little bit. And, of course, we update this, and we'll try to get this a little more organized in the future. But let's get started. WB6CLZ, Mike, you out there?
Tom, KF6Q, WB6CLZ, in Placentia and standing by for the net.
Roger, roger, WB6CIN, Cindy.
Good evening, Tom. This is WB6CIN.
Hey, Cindy, Mike, glad to have you with us this evening. KA6CIA, George, are you listening in? No George this evening. How about KE6RJ, Harry? Are you out there?
Yes, good evening, Tom and Mike and everybody. KE6RJ and KE6QI. We are in Sugarloaf and we are listening and thanks, John, Tom, Tom, for doing it, and Mike.
Hey, Harry, Gary, Nancy, glad to have you up here. I know you're back and forth and you got a busy schedule, so glad you could join us this evening. Call out to KJ6FEX. Alan in Corona, are you out there? Nothing heard. How about AF6ZJ, Guy in Rosamond, California? Man, nothing heard. How about KI6SKN, Chris? Are you out there? Nothing heard. How about KJ6HZS, Mike in Fonskin?
Evening, Tom and Annette. This is KJ6HZS, no traffic.
Okay, roger that. Looking forward to Chris's DX stuff. He's always good stuff, but maybe he'll join us in a little bit. KJ6FIL, Mike in Redlands.
Good evening, Tom and Nanette. KJ6FIL.
Hey, Mike. Love to have you out there. Glad you're listening in almost every week. I don't know any of you missed. KF6VH, Bob. Nothing heard. KJ6KDL, Jim.
KJ6KDL here with KJ6KDK Rosemary. I'm just filling out my invitation to ECS. Woohoo! Finally made it.
All right, good deal there, Jim. Fantastic. You and Rosemary, glad you could listen in. All righty. W6GZI, Frank. Nothing heard. KI6IQA, Kelly.
Good evening, Tom and the net. KI6IQA.
All right, Kelly. Thanks for the ride-along today, and always good to hear you out there. K6GVL, Ron in Green Valley.
Good evening, Tom and the net. This is Ron, K6GVL, Green Valley Lake.
All right, Ron, always a pleasure to have you with us, and we always call you out. Sometimes I know you're busy. 86PL, Harold.
Good evening, 86PL.
Hi, good evening, Harold from Riverside. Glad to have you out there listening in. Let's see, got a guy here, heard him a little while ago, K6LCS, Quint in Harupa Valley. He must have stepped away. W6AWL, Art. And nothing heard. W6JLM, Judith. Nothing heard. She's probably out there splitting firewood. W6KMM, Ken. Nothing heard. KI6OHN, John. Nothing heard. KJ6DBU, Will. Nothing heard. KJ6BCS, Roger. Yeah, nothing heard. KI6MAM, Bill and Landers, are you out there? And nothing heard. How about K6YNW, Chris?
Howdy, K6YNW.
Hello there, Chris. Glad to have you with us again. And there's you're another one that was out there almost all the time there. So glad to have you with us. How about W6KBC, Gary? And nothing heard. KD6LAN, Bill from Boldham Bay.
Yeah, good evening, Tom and the net. I'm not going to check in, though. I'm just going to sit here and harass 73rd KD6LAN.
Okay, Bill. Appreciate that. We know where you live. Alrighty, how about K6HAL, Rudy? And Nothing heard. KI6FGU. AJ. And nothing heard. W6PBZ. Ray, are you out in your garage still? Ah, Maureen probably got home with dinner. I don't blame you. All righty. And KJ6KQE. Dawn. Nothing heard. KJ6BCK. Adam. W06B's nephew. And nothing heard. AE6CK. Victor. And heard, how about KE6VHM, Frank? Nothing heard. KA6ROD, Rod, are you on Echolink? Hey, Roger, I want to give him a little room. He was headed to parts unknown. KJ6DBS, Leon, Arrow Bearer. Nothing heard. K6OKG, Robert. And it heard. KB6LTY, Christy, Apple Valley. And it heard. How about, before I forget him, NQ7RD, Rick in Corona. And I heard, let's see here, we're going down the list. Case, now we got Chris. KJ6LJF, William. Nothing heard. How about K6TUX? Guy from 29 Palms. And nothing heard. How about the gentleman I talked to earlier? I believe it's KI6CPO.
Here, I'll be switching between mobile and HT, but yeah, I'm here.
Okay, didn't catch the name, but the name here is Tom. It's KF6Q with Tech Tuesday Net on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater every Tuesday, 1900 hours. Glad to have you with us.
Tom, and it's Jason. Thanks.
Hey, Jason, glad to have you with us. All righty, that is the list as I have it, and we're always modifying the list. Is there anybody else who would just like to check in? Please come now.
K6CIA listening.
Hey, George, glad to have you with us. Glad it's better to have you late than never. Anybody else out there, please come back.
WA6, Quebec Yankee Yankee.
K6, Quebec Yankee Yankee, one of the original members of the club. Glad to have you with us. Anybody else?
K6TV listening.
Alrighty, glad to have you with us. AE6TV, name there is Hans, correct?
Got it, Tom.
It's a pleasure, glad to have you out there. Anybody else, please come back.
Tom, do you check in my dad, K6EKX, this KJ6HCS, he's listening on a scanner.
Okay, you know what? I've got his name in here. I'm sorry, I missed him, Mike. Sorry about that. Where is he at? No, I got him in here somewhere. Good to have him out there listening. I appreciate that. Anybody else out there, please come back.
Yeah, he's 6SKN.
Another one out there, Chris. That you're off looking for the space station or something. No, glad to have you with us, Chris. Appreciate that. Anybody else out there?
WA6, Mike Queen Fox.
WA6, Mike Queen Fox. Bob, hey, glad you could make it and listen in. Don't fall asleep. Anybody else? Alrighty, well, it's a directed net. but it is an open net. Appreciate people joining in as we go through this with questions or comments. Try to keep it lighthearted and interesting, too, at the same time, and not too technical. Don't want this to be a boring hour. Alrighty, well, let's start out with a DX report. Mike has that for us every week. And let's just know about sunspots and what's been going on. And then after Mike gives his little report, we'll call for others out there. So I have any more information on that. Mike, WB6CLZ, what do you got out there this week? KF6Q.
Little MCW there to introduce the DX report. Okay, well, good evening, everybody. Sunspot count a little bit down from last week. Space Weather's reporting a sunspot number of 67 right now at this moment. Conditions are still pretty good. Let's see. Over the weekend, we worked Italy, Saudi Arabia, England. And Chris and I were kind of double-teaming on French Polynesia. We were using this repeater as our DX spotting network, so Chris would hear him in there and give me a call, and I'd hear something and give him a call. So that worked out pretty cool. And just now on 17-meter sideband, just before the net, St. Croix in the Virgin Islands was kind of cool. Anyway, so things are up and down, but the overall conditions are getting a lot better. Well, I know Chris has got some reports, and hey, maybe Bob has got some reports too. I talked to him on the repeater, and I think he worked some pretty good DX on both CW and on the sideband. So back to you, Tom, and the net. KF6Q and the Tech Tuesday net, WB6CLZ.
Okay, Mike, appreciate that, and yeah, pretty cool, the sound effects, I love it, code, that's great, CW, the originator of ham radio, that's how it was, to get out there and make the distance, that was the only way to get far, his voice would be lost in the noise. Chris, KI6SKN, any good stuff to tell us out there, please come back, KF6Q.
Well, not a whole lot, Tom. I haven't been too busy, too much on the radio this last week. Mike said, yeah, we were goofing around with the guys in French Polynesia. That was fun. And I made a contact or two, New Zealand, Australia. And in the late evening, around 9:30 or so, a guy in Ukraine, Dimitri, a couple other little things, but not much. As I said, I haven't been on the radio a real lot. KI6SKN.
Oh, it sounds like you got a couple of neat things there. Yeah, I know it's as things get busy. By golly, you know, it's radio's a great hobby. It's great to do that, and it's just a matter of finding the time. Any of you guys out there with a tech license and want to join in on some of this beautiful DX stuff, DX meaning long-distance communications, come on down and get your upgrade, you know, get a general. General license, and there's a lot of good receivers, transceivers out there, a lot of them on eBay, a lot of them out there through some of the swap nets out there. I think there's one on 40 meters, a swap net, so... And we'll have a lot of fun out there. It's real simple, and we'll work on getting you on the air cheaply with homemade antennas and a lot of good stuff. So let me reset. And as an example, Rick, real quick before we see if we can get a hold of Bob out there, Mike, real quick, for the majority of those contacts, basically how much power were you running? And I'm going to assume that most of it's through that loop, but homemade loop antenna. And how much power were you running for the most part?
Most we ever run is 100 watts, Tom. And most of the work I did over the weekend, I screwed up my leg, so I couldn't really put up my loop again. It was down kind of low to the ground. We were running a ZS6 BKW, which is an optimized version of the G5 RV.
Okay, roger that. And with 100 watts on that, I know you were making some excellent contacts.
Average signal report was about a 5x7, 5x6 to 5, you know, 5x6 to 5x8. Some of them were a little bit stronger, and a couple of them were a little bit weaker. But yeah, always Q5, always very good copy, especially on the DX station. And he would always give me, you know, Q5 copy reports.
Okay, great. And for anybody out there listening who doesn't know what a 5x7 or what that means, is essentially. Just real quick, audio is the first number on how well your audio was distinguishable, 5 being the best, 1 being the worst. And then the second number, of course, is the S-meter reading, 7 meaning the S7, 9 would be S9, of course, 20 over would be 20 dBs over S9, which is an excellent signal. So anyway, good way of swapping reports and knowing exactly how you're hitting somebody out there. All right, WA6MQF Bob, did you get a chance to get on any of the DX stuff? Please come back.
Roger, WA6MQF here. Well, big deal. Central Kiribati, there's a DX expedition. A half a dozen Dutch hams have gone to a fairly rare island out in the South Pacific, T31A. And I worked them both on phone and CW on 15 meters. Also, I worked Vietnam, Senegal, and Africa, and a guy in France, all on either 15 or 20 meters. Kiribati, that group is on almost all the bands, although 80 and 40 meters, I had no copy here in Big Bear. On the spotting network, I could see the guys on the east working them, but they weren't getting into California at all. And my station here is a three-element beam and about 500 watts. Back to control.
Hey, Bob. And I don't know if that's your PL up a little high. I think that little bit of hum is still in there. But, hey, still glad to hear you. Just want to let you know. So... Alrighty, and I know we had Mickey in there earlier, don't know if he's still in there, but anybody else out there that has any other DX work out there, please come back to Net Control. Alrighty, well, none, hearing there, or hearing none, I should say. Well, Mike, let's start out. Actually, I don't hear Rick out there in Q7RD from Corona. He was kind of interested in this, and we were going to do that this week, but we'll go ahead and proceed. He may join in. Piece of coax, chunk of coax. Now, we do have Chris captive, and I'm going to hand it over to Chris real quick. Chris, we started talking about this a little bit last week, and just real quick, I don't think you were with us last week, as I recall. I'm not sure. chunk of coax, you threw out there to get your tuner in there. Tell everybody about that real quick. You couldn't tune in 80 meters very well, and then just an arbitrary length out there. Do you remember how long Greg had you cut that?
Okay, I believe you're calling KI6SKN there, Tom. The length of that coax, I don't remember. I think it was somewhere around 15 feet, and if it even matters, I think it was 75 ohm. Just an extra length I add in, only on 80 meter, and then my tuner can tune in. Back to you, Tom.
Now, roger that. And what that does is that piece of coax he's added in there, and I don't remember if it was open or shorted, and that probably would change a few things. Either way, what it's going to do is it extends the range of the tuner. a lot of tuners... don't have the, as we get down to the lower frequencies, and he's doing fine on 40, but he gets down to 80 and having difficulty there, and sometimes not even tuning in. So what this chunk of coax does, it acts not as coax whatsoever, acts as a capacitor, basically, or an inductor, one of the two. And essentially what it does is at that frequency, need to add, the antenna is really high in capacitance because it's too short. That's what happens. If the antenna is too short for a band, it looks more like a capacitor. So we offset it with an inductor, and that piece of coax is going to look like an inductor, a coil. Even though it's still looking like a piece of wire, you don't coil it up. It just hangs out there. So We're going to get into that, and actually any length is a good length. Depends on what you have to match. So rather than get too technical, you can start out with a longer length and just add it in, trim it back a little bit. But I think even anything out there, it'll all start working together pretty good. So let me reset. This is KF6Q, Tom, on the Tech Tuesday Net at 1900 hours every Tuesday on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. Well, Mike, saying all that, with coax, we're going to get into why that looks like a capacitor or an inductor or whatever. So we're going to kind of rehash over a little bit about transmission lines, period. Now, I know that you were doing a little research and whatever. Were you able to find out, anything more about the coax thing?
Break.
Go ahead, break.
Thank you. Sorry, Tom, Chris, where do you put that piece of coax? You didn't say that. KD6LAN.
Ah, good question. Thanks for breaking in. Well, what you would do, now this is not for 2 meter. This is going to be for the HF band. What it is you actually take off the back of the radio, you'll have a T splitter. One end of that T will go, of course, the middle goes to the radio and actually to the tuner. The other two ends, one will go up to your normal feed to your antenna, your long wire. The other end, or it could be, it doesn't even have to be a long wire, it could be any antenna. The other end of the T connects into this piece of coax. And basically, it can lay on the coax can lay on the ground. It's not an antenna. You can coil it up. You don't have to coil it up. You can stretch it out, do anything you want with it. But basically, yes, it literally just hangs on there like, an appendage. Does that help you out? I'm sorry, Bill. I forgot to say that. Does that help out?
Yeah. Just kind of curious. Go ahead. KD6LAN.
Yeah, Roger that. Very good point. Yeah, because I know that some of the people out there already know some of this stuff. Some people have never heard of it. And there's a few in between. So we're trying to cover bases for everybody. So. Anyway, Mike, anything else you heard about that as far as how they act as a capacitor, inductor, and that's related to the frequency, too, of the band? As it changes, of course. It's, say, for 80 meters, whatever it does at 80 meters, it may not do at 40 meters. But, generally it won't hurt anything at 40. But, Mike, did you find anything else out that you'd like to add? WB6CLZ, AF6Q.
Regarding the coaxial stub, I did not find anything in the application that Chris is using it. But I will comment that on my ZS6, which is basically the identical antenna, the ZS6 BKW, we call it the Burger King Whopper, Chris. Chris coined the phrase. My rig will tune that without adding the capacitance or without adding the coax on that. So basically, and as Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that is only on 75, 80 meters. His antenna tune, or his rig will tune that antenna on just about all of the other bands, except maybe 12 meters or 17, I'm not sure. But no, I actually did not find anything regarding that particular application of coax.
You roger that. It is out there, and you may find that. You have the antenna manual. Yeah, I think it's in there, so if you can't find it online, that's okay. But anyway, and that's basically what that does is extend the range of the tuner, or it makes the antenna more tunable. So like you say, with your rig, it tunes it in. Somebody else's rig, it may not. It's nothing to do with the antenna itself. You know, it's a matter of the capacity, how much the tuner can grasp. It is possible to have a tuner grasp almost anything, but it just depends what they're, you know, how they're built. So, not a big deal. Anyway, and that's no detrimental fact of the tuner. It could be within a fraction and just not quite grab it. Well, anyway, Mike, our next topic, because we're just going to skim on that, we're going to have to get back to why this happens. Let me reset. And to understand why it happens, we got to understand what's going on with the transmission line. Whether it be coax or parallel line, ladder line, window line, whatever, transmission line's transmission line. So, Michael, anything to start us out with here as far as how much research did you, I know you're busy, so I know, did you get any, with that DX stuff, you can only do one thing, or two, one thing at a time. Anything else you found out about that? And if not, I'll start proceeding here.
I'm a one-trick pony most of the time. We did study a little bit on it, and did realize that from studying that really what you're trying to correct is an unbalance, any kind of an unbalance in the antenna, and that type of tuning stuff. I think they call it a coaxial resonator match is what Chris is using. And correct me if I'm wrong, please, of course. But it basically cancels out the undesired reactants of the antenna and then it tunes it to resonance. And I think that's what we're looking for any time we use an antenna to try to tune it to resonance.
Roger that. And actually, you can use that stub to tune it even just closer to resonance, and then the tuner itself will take it, you know, all the way, the rest of the way. Or you can actually match it up perfect. And, you know, that's where different lengths of transmission line appear differently at different frequencies. And this is the basis of the ZS6BKW and the G5RV, which have specific lengths for that line coming down, which is why we have to start at the beginning here if we're going to tell the true story. So let me reset.
Break.
Go ahead, break.
Okay, just curious. Now, coming off the T off the back of the radio and one end goes towards the antenna, could you theoretically put the tuner on the other end of the T on the stub?
No. What you do want to do is come off of the radio to the tuner, that length direct. The radio wants to see 50 ohms. The tuner is going to make sure that it does. So actually, this T would go on the output of the tuner. The tuner is basically a coil and a capacitor. That's all it is. And it's changed to match up, you know, on different bands or different frequencies or whatever to match that up. It could be an L network, it could be what we call a pi network, or it could be a T network, which is just basically how the coils and capacitors are configured, but it's really simple. Now, the problem is quite often the coil-capacitor combination doesn't have enough range. It's kind of like having a volume control, but you want to just crank that just a little bit louder. But it stops right there. And that's what that piece of coax will do. It has to be on the same side that the antenna is. And what it does is it acts as a chunk. You could actually not put the coax there. You could put a capacitor there itself. Or you could put a coil there. Would do the same thing. The thing about the piece of coax is a lot of people have extra coax. And getting the proper device on there and hooking it up can sometimes be a little awkward, so, but there's a lot of different ways to skin the same cat. Does that help you?
Roger that.
Okay, Roger, glad to have the question, and I probably wasn't clear on that. Yeah, we still want to keep the tuner in line with the radio, yeah, and proceed. Anyway, well, Mike, moving on to transmission lines itself. Okay, here we have a radio. We got a tuner. Somewhere out there down the way is our antenna. Now, to get our signal from the tuner to the antenna, we have a transmission line. What kind of transmission lines can we use?
Roger.
the two primary, I would say, and the one that most people use is coaxial cable. I think everybody's familiar with that. Yeah, you know, background being the old CB days or whatever, coaxial cable is probably the most common. The most, actually the most efficient would be a parallel line, ladder line, window line, you know, that sort of thing. KF6Q and the tech using that WV6CLZ.
Question.
Go ahead, question.
Okay, Mike just said ladder line. KD6LAN here for ID. Mike just said ladder line, but how many different sizes of coax are there? And my question is, what would be the optimum coax? 8, 58, 9, 6, 59, whatever.
Well, okay, let's start with the coax. And, of course, there's a lot of different kinds of coax. There is a slew of different kinds of coax. And coaxes are rated in two different things. Actually, three, but the third one's very insignificant, and that's its physical diameter. Two of the things with coax are it's what they call characteristic impedance, which with most ham radios, we're looking for 50 ohms. However, you can use 75. You can use other coaxes there, as we're going to get into that, too, for adjustment, tuning, or whatever. And we can match it up. Now, the second thing is, like, RG8 is 50 ohms. RG58 is 50 ohms. LMR400 is 50 ohms. And what do we have there? Well, the second thing is that they're rated in is the quality of the cable. In other words, how much signal loss, you know, we think, okay, we're putting a signal in this end. We're getting all that signal out the other end. Well, that's not true. And at different frequencies, it tends to fall off faster with certain coaxes. So the best coax to answer your question there is, number one, match it to the radio as best as possible. Second thing would be, make sure that it's good to operate at the frequency that you're going to use. Let me reset. And that would mean at 2 meter, don't recommend using RG58 for any lengths over 10 feet. It will work. You can use it. You could use it at 50 feet. You're going to lose a lot of your signal on 2 meter. This is not going to work as well as RG8. RG8's thicker and bigger in diameter, a little harder to work with. LMR400. Also good, and then there's other stuff beyond that. It gets pricey. If money's no object, then money's no object. But you'll find that the better quality cables, which will work the best, cost more. That's just, and that's to be expected. Reset. Let me throw it to Mike real quick. Mike, anything to add to that?
I'll give an example of some of what Tom was just saying. RG8, standard RG8, and this is at 100 megahertz, which is just a little bit below this band. I mean, you're talking a loss per 100 feet, a dB loss of 1.2 dB. Well, that adds up. And then you go down to RG58, and sometimes some of the RG58 has up to a 5.4 dB loss. I mean, you're losing a lot of your signal, and it goes up and down from there. But, I mean, usually we always say the best coax you can afford, you know, for the frequency you're using. Back to you, Tom.
Comment?
Okay, before I hand it over to the comment, I do want to add one thing in here for people who don't know what dBs are and what they mean. And, Mike, I think probably we should, like, if we're going to say 3 dB loss, that is 50% is gone. If you have a 6 dB loss, 75% of your signal is gone. It don't make it there. It just gets... just like going through a light bulb, a lot of heat and warmth, but no signal. You know, you have 25%. So a 1 dB loss, not a lot. But when we start looking at 3, which is we're losing at least half, that's bad. You don't want that. So let's, you know, we'll try to keep the dBs also in reference to percentages, so just for everybody out there so they understand. Go ahead, comment info.
Was going to say just what you said, Tom. Over.
Hey, Bob, appreciate that. Yeah, so, and actually RG6, excellent. I have 2,000 feet of RG6. It's great for satellite. It can also be used for radio work. Just as a quick reminder, anybody who's familiar with wire dipoles, a flat top wire dipole, if it's up there at its quarter length or better height off the ground, will appear to be 72 ohms. That's not going to match with 50 ohm coax, but it's real close to 75 ohm coax. So when we get back down to the ground, what we got to do is try to get that 75 to match up to our radio. And that's TLTs. We had a little bit of that before, but we'll cover that again. So, Mike, real quick, anything to add? And then if not, we'll ask for questions.
But I want to thank Bob and you, Tom, for coming in and explaining that. Yeah, sometimes I kind of get narrow there. Okay, back to you, Tom.
Okay, roger that. And for anybody who's interested in that, too, a lot of times, well, it's in the Radio Amateur's Handbook, but you can also usually Google it online and get a good chart, and they'll give you of how much loss there is in a type of coax. Good example, RG58 or RG8X Mini, as they call it. not good at all on 2 meters. However, it's great on the HF bands. What's the advantage? Why would you do that? Well, if you know you're only going to work the HF bands with that particular coax and that particular antenna, you'll save a lot of money because it's generally going for about 30 cents a foot. So that's the factor. That's the third factor that's important. If you're not, you don't need to have up into the gigahertz range of quality if you're not going to be using it up there. So why pay for that? So I'll call for a quick question. Response of questions or comments, please come back.
LCF.
MQF.
Romeo Delta.
Right, and the order, LCS, we have MQF and Rick RD. Let's go to Clint first in Harupa Valley, K6 LCS, go ahead.
You know, we have spectrum management associations. We need network in Southern California management associations so folks don't miss stuff like this. Anyway, on RG58, yeah, it's inexpensive, but when it comes to laying it on the ground or burying it, you need to put it in PVC or something. That's where some of the more expensive coaxes have an edge because they are direct burial. So if you are using that 58 for an HF installation across the yard, put it in PVC or protect it some other way. And again, this is just a marvelous net. Good work, guys. K6 LCS.
Okay, Clint, glad to have you out there, and glad to see you could join in there with us. And it was in your area today, not too well, actually passing through. So, okay, next would be Bob, MQF.
Roger, going to comment on a couple of things. First of all, on coaxes, the advantage of the RG8X, besides being inexpensive, it has a large diameter center conductor. The foam dielectric on it is easily damaged. You don't want to bend it sharply, but it can handle considerably more power than RG58. And the RG8 type coaxes, the one with a non-contaminating outer jacket, is RG213. And until you make the next leap of dollars, RG8 and RG213 have basically the same specifications, but the 213 is a much more rigorous plastic construction. And then I was going to make a comment on antenna tuners and resonance. What you want your radio to see is 50 ohms of resistance, no extra inductance, no extra capacitance. And when your tuner does, is if your antenna is less than perfect, depending on the vector of the air, it'll either be capacitive or inductive. And so you add the opposite. If it's gone capacitive, you add a little inductance, and you cancel out, and it becomes only 50 ohms of resistor, and the same going the other way. WA6MQF.
Excellent, Bob. This is KF6Q, Tom, on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. Check Tuesday, every Tuesday, 1900 hours, conditions permitting. Yeah, Bob, and actually what you're saying there is what they call canceling out, you know, the other reactants to get that pure resistance look, looking down the line. We're going to kind of touch over that, too, over the next few weeks. We have a huge itinerary of doing this stuff and how the Smith chart, and we're going to get into polar coordinates, a real simple method of understanding what does that mean, cancel this out, capacitance, inductance. So, Bob, you're up there with us at the extra class level. We got to make sure we get everybody up to par with that. And I appreciate that information. Good information. Rick, NQ7RD in Corona, go ahead.
Thank you much, Tom, and good evening to everyone here on the net. And if you wouldn't mind just giving me a late chicken, check-in. I guess that's what I had for dinner. Check in, please, and, well, I am on here. Yeah, regarding those dB losses, I'm a real stickler on that, you know, talking to a lot of Elmers, and they're saying, you know, don't worry about the 1 dB loss or half a dB loss, and I'm just shaking my head. I mean, how can you not worry about loss? A loss is a loss, whether it be 0.05 or what, and a lot of people don't realize that on a 100-watt radio, a 0.05 dB loss is 1 watt lost. And if you have control over it, you know, why lose that 1 watt? And they're saying it doesn't matter. But still, if you can just buy a one better connector, or just the way you soldered it, or just something, if you just change something and you gain that 0.05, why not? And regarding the tuners, I currently have a balanced line open wire feeding my dipole. Let me reset. And I've done I've connected my MFJ on it so I can do the two capacitors and the inductor. It's an MFJ 969 T-network. And whether I connect it to the Balun, the built-in Balun, the 4-to-1 Balun, and connect it to the balanced output with that little jumper, I can tune the antenna 1-to-1 to a 50-ohm match, which, of course, that's what it's meant to do. But then I can also move one of the open wires to the random wire length, remove the jumper, put the other end of my open wire to the chassis. So, in other words, I'm not using the Balun now. I'm just going straight from the chassis to the random wire, but still using my balanced line to the same dipole, and I can still tune it 1-to-1 to a 50-ohm on the MFJ. So just wondering, what's the purpose of those 4-to-1 Baluns or 6-to-1 Baluns if they're saying that you want to match the feed line to 50 ohms, yet I guess is that pretty much doing that if you weren't going to use a tuner? I'm pretty much thinking that when you run an open wire, you have to use a tuner, especially the way I'm using a 80-meter dipole to, you know, run my higher bands. NQ7RD.
Okay, Rick. Yeah, we can answer all that. I can answer all those and clarify that a little bit. And I can see we're going to be going next week into the parallel line stuff. Here is a good example. Okay, like Bob said, your radio wants to see 50 ohms, pure resistance, and so the tuner pretty much does that to make sure it's 50 ohms. Excuse me. Now, what's going to happen is your antenna up there will tune up really nice at a specific frequency. As you veer off that frequency, it's going to change a little bit. It has to. It's a fact of life. Now, what if we've got the perfect antenna and it's set the perfect everything, and it's, say, let's just say it's 50 ohms. It's probably going to be 72 ohms, but let's just say it's 50 ohms. And you have a 50-ohm line. Well, there's a perfect match. We're good. But as soon as it goes off frequency, or in other words, it doesn't go off frequency, you say, okay, well, I'm at 39.35 on my 80-meter dipole or 75-meter dipole. So you go down to 38-something, or you go up a little bit higher. Well, it's not going to be perfect anymore. So what happens is that impedance, that net characteristic tends of the antenna, goes, it starts to rise for the most part. And let's say if it's 400 ohms now, if you have a 4-to-1 balun, that 400 ohms will now look like 100. It'll transform that ratio. Doesn't make it perfect. It allows you to capture more of that off-frequency area, and that's what it's about, because you really don't want to have to worry about, well, I got 50-ohm coax, I got a 50-ohm antenna, what do I need it for? The 4-to-1 is basically to do that. It just helps you capture a wider area. Now, when it's on frequency, let me reset. When it's on frequency, yes, it'll be 50, and you're going to divide that by 4. Well, that's bad. You'll be down there at 12. So that's not going to be good, but it's just real tight like that. As soon as you get off that, it gets perfect and then gets better on each side. So in reality, yeah, it helps. It just gives you a better range. Your tuner can now tune a better range because of that. And you're going to get a worse match on frequency, so you're sacrificing that to get more range on the upper and lower end. Does that make any sense, Rick?
Yeah, that makes sense. But I was referring to, you know, the tuner is still able to give it the 50 ohms and still able to match it 1-to-1. And reading the information off the MFJ, you know, I'm bringing, whether it's connected to the balance line or the long wire to the chassis, I playing around with the tuner, of course, you know, I can keep it on one frequency, and once I switch the balanced wire in the back, I have to retune it, which, of course, is no problem. I've got a manual tuner, so, you know, I know if I go, you know, 500 kcs or sometimes even 50 kcs, depending on the band, I'm going to retune. I have no problem with that. I know that a lot of people don't like to keep messing with it every time they tune around the band, but I have no problem with that. So I was just wondering, with or without the 4-to-1 built-in balun in the tuner, I can still get the 50 ohms and a 1-to-1 match. So I'm thinking with the balun in line, that's just adding another loss if I can get the same exact reading without it. Of course, again, just, you know, tuning around. I know, if you can look at that, I don't care about the bandwidth of the antenna, where they're saying, you know, you can get more without always having to adjust it. But I have no problem to adjust it. If I move a few KCs off, I'm checking that SWR and, you know, do my best to get it back to 1-to-1. And Q7RD. That makes sense now.
Okay, Rick. Yeah, actually, if the tuner is pulling it in and doing its job and getting you a 1-to-1, then the balun is there simply to add in or take out if it can't, if it's got problems capturing, it depends on the antenna. And evidently, your antenna is a good antenna, you know, so it's basically tuned up to the point where, you know, it's working. So the balance, like an optional thing, because you've got a balanced input anyway, and you're coming from a balanced antenna. And there's a lot of things that we're going to talk about here in the future, too, because we have balun, and we say we have a 1-to-1 balun or 4-to-1 balun. Actually, we're doing two things with that. We're going from a balanced line to coax, number one. Number two, that's what balance means, balanced to unbalanced. And then if there's a ratio, it's actually forming a transformer where it's 4-to-1 impedance transformation. It's actually doing two things at the same time. So not to be confused, they can be used separate. Which is why we have a 1-to-1 balun. Basically, it's just a switch from coax to window line. So, but anyway, sounds like you're all set up there. And, yeah, a lot to this. And this is why we've spent weeks and weeks on Tech Tuesday. Love to talk about it. Interesting stuff. Love to see people out there using this. Let me just check in with Mike, my my buddy over there. And Mike, anything to add on that? You've added a 4-to-1 on your loop and got better range. Is that correct? WB6CLZ, KF6Q.
KF6Q in the Tech Tuesday group, WB6CLZ. Yeah, on both the loops, the one down here in Placentia, which is 75-meter loop, which will not tune on 160 meters, and also the loop up there, which happens to be 520 feet, which will tune pretty nicely on 160. Yeah, we have the 4-to-1 ballon, and it does work a lot better. It gets better range across the entire band rather than just small portions of the band. And the tuner on my rig is a very broad tuner. I almost tune a wet noodle, but yeah, that 4-to-1 ballon really helps.
And Roger, I think I was with you up here in Sugarloaf when you were actually Irwin White, when you were setting that up, and you had a 1-to-1 on it, and it worked. And then we put the 4-to-1 on there. I brought that over. We hooked that up, and actually you got a broader range of a better match. We actually took readings and did that with the MFJ, and it's amazing. You know, I mean, there's a lot that can be done in amateur radio with antennas and transmission lines and tuners. And there's the real simple thing. I've seen this online. Anybody out there who's familiar with antennas knows that this is not what you do. But you can do this, and it'll work. And they'll run a coax straight out of the radio up to the antenna, and the shield goes to one wire and the center connector to the other wire. Right off the bat, you're going from a coax to a balanced antenna. Not good. It'll work, though. It will work. It's just not the best way to do that. So as we try to do this with Tech Tuesday, we take the bare minimum, which would be that, and build upwards from that so people understand why can't I do that if it works? Well, let's see. You could probably get a tank of gas every time you go to the gas station and throw in a pint of water. Will that work? Yeah. Is it good? No. Is it going to really do anything better? Nope. But it'll work, but it's not going to do anything. So, anyway, Mike, anything to add real quick?
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing, if you're just putting coax onto a couple of pieces of wires, like a dipole up in the sky, and especially if you have like a D104 or a metallic mic or something, you're awfully likely to get bit. RF coming back into the shack and kind of tickles you a little bit, which is not a fun thing to do.
Roger that. So anyway, real quick, before we move out of this area, because we seem to have a lot of interest out there, anybody else with any comments or questions, please come back.
Yes, just with a quick news note, please.
LTY.
Okay, let's go to LCS for the quick news note. Go ahead, Clint.
Moving up the amateur frequency range, our good friend Alan Lowe, Alan who makes the Aero antennas, has sold his business. His wife had a horrible health condition last year, and he needs to devote more time to helping his wife recover. So he's handed it over to a fellow ham. So please keep supporting them. The quality will still be there. The new gentleman is a little bit more of a marketing person, but those of us who love those Aero antennas do a lot of word of mouth. But Alan Lowe, a good friend to the hobby, a good friend to not only our satellite folks, but to amateur radio in general, is kind of bowing out. And any emails sent through his website are now going to the new gentleman. But it's a little transition. Inventory at your local ham shops should be good on his J-poles and his satellite antennas. But just a good friend is in a transition period right now for us. Thank you, Ned. K6LCS.
Okay, Quint, thanks for that information. Hopefully whoever's taking that over will do as good a job. I have two of his antennas. I have a 440 Yagi handheld. And I've got the Cross Yagi for doing satellite work, which both are excellent. Easy to put together out of the case. Both worked fine without a flaw, so hopefully it'll carry on. All right. We also had LTY, Chrissy, out there, and there might have been somebody else in there before that. I'm not sure, but I'm going to hand to Christy first, and then whoever was after that. Go ahead.
Thank you, Tom. This is KB6LTY, and thanks, Clint, for the news. I had a question about your random wire connection, and is that equivalent to what's called the counterpoise, and does it have to be coax? Can it be an insulated wire? And as far as a balanced line, does it also help when your transmission line is a balanced line? And I think NQ7RD mentioned that he does use a random wire as a counterpoise for his balanced transmission line. That's about all I have. Thanks, Tom, KB6LTY.
Okay, you have quite a few questions there. Rick, NQ7RD, you want to go ahead and just inform us a little bit on your random wire, and maybe that'll be better than going through net control. Go ahead, Rick.
Oh, thank you, Tom. No, it is not a random wire. It is a 300-ohm open wire feeding my center-fed 80-meter dipole, little over 80 feet per length from the feed point, if you want to call it a feed point, because my complete antenna system is one wire, so it's actually a single wire from the antenna tuner all the way out to the tip of the antenna. Right where I center fed it, or I guess I didn't feed it. I just split the wire open. So, no, it's not a random wire. It's a completely balanced line, opens up to a 80-meter horizontal dipole. Thank you, Senator.
Okay, so 300 ohm goes up and then splits apart and continues out in each direction, and there you are. Christy, does that help you at all?
Well, sort of, but I guess it'll take an extended discussion. Anyway, I'll send it back to net control. Thanks, Tom, KB6LTY.
Comment. Okay, before I hand it over, comment. Yeah, I know with a random wire, and I have to say this about a random wire. If you've been a ham radio operator for a while, a random wire is not a problem, but it's your bare minimum antenna. And it's good to use. It's fun to use if you're experimenting around. I believe a lot of times, part of that will be vertical. There are issues with that. You can get RF feedback with that. And a lot of times it will work with a counterpoise system on the ground because of the part of the vertical part. So, but that is a whole other topic in itself. We'll try to reach out and grab that as we're stacking up on topics, probably be into June, if that's okay. Maybe the latter part of May this month. So, anyway, comment info. Go ahead.
Making sure it was my comment. WA6MQF here. Comments on a couple of topics. The dipole hard-fed with coax, the problem with doing that, and it does work, as you said, Tom, is you're going to get current flowing in the outer coax, and it's going to become radiating, and it's going to decrease the efficiency and cause the greater losses in the radiation of the antenna. On the matter of a counterpoise, the counterpoise generally is used to compensate for an ineffective ground, where you end up with a highly unbalanced load across your whatever you're coming out of your transmitter with, likely coax. And so by tuning the ground, you can suck the away some of the inductive or capacitive reactance of the system and bring the antenna closer to resonance, and then the tuner doesn't have quite so much to do. WA6MQF.
Thanks, Bob. No, I appreciate that. On the counterpoise, excellent explanation and why it's used. KF6Q here for ID on Tech Tuesday, the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater every Tuesday, 1900 hours, conditions permitting. Now, right, exactly with, there's a lot of things that happen at RF frequencies that don't happen at normal AC wall current and stuff like that. And it's talking about, we're talking about current that flows on the inside of a shield, on the outside of a shield, in different directions, different amounts, and it gets a little complicated, but we're going to do some water pipe, water flow similes of that, and if we get to that point, which is what we're working up to from the basic transmission line. So, but we've had a lot of good topic and discussion just on coax itself. So, yeah, Bob, basically you're right. Yeah, you're wasting current coming down the outside. You're also going to have a problem with radiation inefficiency, and you're going to get shocked, possibly. A little tingle, as Mike calls it. So, but anyway, we're getting there. We're going to get to that direction. We're working on it. But, yeah, there's a lot to all of this, and that's why we do it every Tuesday, because if we did it every other Tuesday, we'd forget what we talked about 2 weeks prior. It's hard enough with 1 week. Anyway, any more comments or questions on basic coax as we've been discussing? Please come back. All right. Well, Michael, without going through Electricity 101, you're an electrician by trade for years. I've worked with electricity and electronics for years. Like to have you real brief, but not too brief. You got a wire and electric circuit in the house. You got a hot wire, you got a ground wire. Basically, you got two wires, and it's AC. So let's see. What happens in those two wires at AC frequencies? What do we got going on there? We got basically current flowing in both directions. We have, you know, I'm looking at this. Why is this not an antenna? You know, what's going on there? Just tell us a little bit about what's going on with AC and DC.
Okay, you're too vague. I don't know what you're getting at, Tom. Well, we all know that current flows through the circuit from positive to, or actually, I believe it's negative to positive on DC, but there's different schools of thoughts on that depending on where you look. On AC, it always tries to find ground, always flows to ground. Maybe I'm not understanding what you're getting. I will though speak about something everybody knows about, ground fault circuit interrupter. Basically that senses current, if the current enters the circuit and the current leaving the circuit is different than 5 milliamps, so it will trip your ground fault circuit interrupter. Yeah, maybe I didn't get it. Props me a little better, Tom. KF6Q in the Tech Tuesday group, WB6CLZ.
Sorry, Mike. I dropped a bomb on you there. That's okay. good information there, too, on GFIs. We all have a, you know, or most of us would be a little familiar with vehicle DC power, our batteries or our flashlights DC power. This is Electricity 101. And essentially with a DC circuit, you've got your battery, you've got two wires coming from the battery, one plus, one minus. They go out and to, let's say, a light bulb or whatever it may be, a motor, whatever, a DC motor, whatever it is, the current flows in a big loop out of the battery, through the load, back to the battery. Now, Michael, this is DC. And AC is a lot similar, except it switches directions about 60 times a second. There's a reason why we do that. It's efficiency for going over great distances. But now when the electricity flows through a wire, besides the little resistance that, you know, that's there, what else happens magnetically, Mike? Back to you.
Yeah, magnetic lines of force that are generated or created around the wire, usually in a circular direction, and that's called the magnetic flux. And they are similar AC to DC, but AC is constantly changing intensity and direction.
Gotcha. With AC actually changing direction, it has to go back through zero, reverse polarity, go back to its peak, go back down to zero, reverse polarity, and does that 60 times a second. What we're talking on right now, 147,930,000 times a second, switching polarity. But wait a minute. Okay, now the house is 60. We're at 147.930. Big difference there. Is it all the same, RF and house current?
RF wants to go somewhere. It wants to radiate. And, yeah, that's changing directions and intensity at a really fast speed. It's hauling buns. So it wants to go out there and it wants to do something rather than just staying in the lines.
Hey, Roger that. We're working up to transmission lines. You have to understand this stuff, and I know this is real basic electricity 101. Now, these electromagnetic lines of force, actually, if you take that DC circuit again and you coil that wire up in a coil and run it through there, hey, you've got an electromagnet. It's going to move your little compass. It's a science project for probably a sixth grader, you know, or somewhere in there. It's real simple, and it shows you this magnetic force. It'll put a, you know, you can see it put a nail in there, and it's going to draw the little paper clips to it, cool stuff like that. That's pretty neat. That shows magnetic lines of force. AC does the same thing. It just reverses direction quickly. Now, let's get back to water pipe. And water pipe is what AC is going to start looking like. Mike, skin effect is where we're going with this.
Well, the electrons have a tendency to travel on the outside of the conductor. That thereby is called skin effect. And keeping that in mind, you can't determine it that the whole conductor is being used at RF. The higher the frequency, the more it wants to travel to the outside of the conductor.
Roger that. So I guess what we're saying here is that DC, it's all going the same direction. It's not reversing. Magnetic field is continuous until the circuit opens and it falls. And essentially, we've got this wire. We've got electrons flowing through the entire cross-section of the wire, whatever it is, in the middle, quarter of the wave out, whatever, you know, whatever it is. That wire is solid electrons moving. Kind of cool. Can't see them. I tried. I looked hard. You can't see them moving. Now, AC at 60 cycles a second in our house current. Switching directions. Probably not fast enough to do the skin effect. But what happens when we're talking about radio. Okay, we're talking about wires going to antennas. We're talking about extremely high reversing of direction. The electricity is no longer going through the entire wire. Basically, if you could visualize a copper pipe would hold the same amount of current flow because it's all in the skin. Nothing's even traveling in the middle, even if there was copper there. Mike, you want to add to that? Go ahead.
Because that guy is a stress case. Okay, well, I just got a birdie on the radio, but I did catch you. And that's why at microwave, that's why we use copper pipe. That's why the higher frequencies, like in microwave, we use waveguides, is because you don't need the center of the conductor.
Quincy, I'm listening to myself.
Yeah, Roger. Yeah, we all QR them in there. It's, everybody, let's try to just don't worry about that. What'll happen is that it goes to the skin of the conductor. So now let's just jump over to coax real quick. Okay, here's coax. We have a center conductor of wire. We already know, since it's RF, that wire is not conducting anything in its core, but it is going to be conducting on the skin of the center wire itself. Then we have the outer shield. Now, the shield also is conducting our signal. It's got an outside and an inside to it, too. And it's not the same. You can have currents flowing on the outside of that shield and on the inside, and they're different, totally different, because this is RF. This is RF energy, not DC energy anymore. Mike, want to go ahead and add to that, please?
Now, I'm trying to figure out where you're going, Tom. Yeah, but we do know that coax is unbalanced and that it does flow at a different rate.
Well, okay, so what we're saying is we can have a signal going up the coax to our antenna. You know, but Mike's talking about signal coming back the antenna. Well, why doesn't that cancel out? Does that cancel out with the signal going up? Well, no, because one is inside the shield, on the inside surface of the shield. And what if it hits an imbalance up there, that imbalance will bounce off and come down the outside of the shield to that direction. This is why we don't hook coax directly to a dipole. Go ahead and add, Mike, add to that.
And that is why we use a balance to balance it out. And that is why we use ladder line as a low loss feed line.
It's stress. Stress.
Right. Now, roger that. And basically, why we're going in this direction is we're going to get to the point of why the feed line doesn't radiate. Feed lines are not supposed to radiate. Because of part, and the whole thing about that energy coming down the outside because of an imbalance, what that does is we're wasting energy that's just going to nowhere. If it goes to the antenna, it's going to radiate. You're going to have a better signal out there. Like Rick said in Q7RD, every little loss is one more watt or power or whatever that's not going out. So when you start adding all of these things up, a little loss in the coax, a little loss in the connectors, too many connectors, each one has a little loss to it, and this misbalance, you add this all up, and a guy will say, hey, I've got the same antenna, and I'm feeding it with coax, and I'm not talking to that guy way out there. Well, that's because his whole signal's not going out, and that's the difference. And that's what we're trying to work with everybody out here who listens in and help you down the yellow brick path. May not be going to Oz, but we're going to get there to the best ham signal out there. Back to you, Mike.
Well, yeah, and another thing I'll add, and we'll get there probably in a couple of weeks, that just because you have a low SWR doesn't mean you're radiating.
Oh, yes, yes, that's the next biggest issue is the SWR meter lies. But it's used as a standard, and a lot of times it's good, but it's like driving down the road with a speedometer that's not calibrated. You will get a ticket, okay, you know, or you'll be holding everybody up. But anyway, that'll be another topic, another day. So Mike, anyway, what we're trying to get at with this electric lines of force and field. We'll briefly go over this because I think we're about to run out of time here, but if you have two wires and equal currents flowing in equal directions or opposite directions, these wires are close to each other, say like ladder line, and I'm running, say, let's just say DC through it. I'm not using it for RF. Now I got a magnetic field going down one wire, and I got another one coming down the other wire. What happens with those two fields?
They're in the lion's cage. Well, naturally, they would cancel each other out, though.
Right, but please bear in mind, this is...
Roger that. And that is the biggest thing about transmission line, whether it be coax or ladder line. You have the two conductors that are equally spaced. And you have a magnetic field, even though coax is shielded. The shield itself has a magnetic field. The interconductor has a magnetic field. The two cancel to each other. They cancel out. Therefore, they do not radiate. The antenna does not have. The antenna wires go in opposite directions. Therefore, they do radiate. That electromagnetic radiation, where it belongs, is what gets you out there. So... and that's where we're headed. But Mike, I think we're running out of time here. Anything we're gonna have to close this down. But anything else to add? And we're gonna carry on with this, I think, next week from where we left off. So anything else to add?
And
hopefully we can pick up right here where we left off because we're getting into the nitty gritty, and this is what is important from here.
other stuff is the basics. But what we're about to get into is what makes a station being able to get out there and work the DX, or, you know, being able to only be heard a couple of hundred to a thousand miles out. And like you say, anytime you can eliminate any losses at all and make your antenna radiate, that's where we're headed with this topic.
Roger that, and it is more than we can ever cover in one night, but we do want to, and we're getting a little bit extended out here. I do appreciate all the people interested earlier on with just with the coax issues, but we'll get into why some of those coaxes are less efficient, and we're going to, this is all coming together, tie this all together as we've done in the past, so. And I think it's been probably close to a year since we've done this. And the better you understand this as a ham, you'll understand why, if you have a problem that creeps in somewhere down the road, you'll say, hey, you know what? This could be this because, and you'll know why, rather than simply look at the SWR meters. This says I'm doing great, but I can't talk to anybody, so. Anyway, all right, in closing, and I would love to go on forever, but we've got to shut it down here, guys. So anybody with any quick questions, please come back and before we close down. KF6Q.
Keep RD very rude.
Okay, RD, I think we're getting a couple of, a little bit of the other group out there, which we're going to have to talk to them again, but don't worry about that. We'll work with that. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, I know we're going to get a little more into it, but I just wanted to throw out, since the subject was coax, that I found out that LMR 400, the solid one, compared to LMR Ultraflex, the flexible one, the solid one has a little less loss. So I was surprising there, so that's something that I'm going to be thinking about making my jumper patch cords with, even though they're going to be short. You know, like I was always saying, a loss is a loss. So if you can go with the solid one and have just that much less loss, it'll be that much better for you in the long run. Just wanted to throw that out. And looking forward to the next week one, because I'm an open wire person myself. I want to throw all the coax away. Thank you much, fellas. NQ's 7RD. Good night.
Okay, Rick, really appreciate that. Yeah, and it, like I said, it's a huge area of topic. We've got a lot of information to share. It's great to have other people out there who are already partway down this road, and, you know, that's what it's all about. So coax is good in certain circumstances. I would say for VHF stuff, it's okay. When you get into the HF stuff, that's one reason why you don't see a lot of ladder line or window line in VHF at those frequencies to maintain that, you know, good impedance. The wire, the proximity of the wires becomes a little bit unobtainable, put it that way. So you can do it, but it's a little tougher to do. So anyway, and that's for manufacturers. You know, we can, hams, we can do anything, right? All right, anybody else out there, any comments or questions or suggestions, please come back. We'll try to carry this up again next week. Go ahead.
Got a quickie, Tom.
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, the people who have been listening to this for a while now heard me whining before. But I've been a ham for a long time, and I'm the type of ham that for the first 15 or 20 years, I'd go down to HRO and buy the latest and greatest vertical or the mini beam or something like that. And, you know, I was getting out, I was working stations, and when the sunspots were good, I was working DX and all that kind of stuff. But reality is, you know, I didn't have a good radio system. I just wasn't knowledgeable and didn't know where to go to find the knowledge. So, you know, I had a station and it was working, but I'll be perfectly honest with you, a roll of number 14 stranded electrical wire, making a loop or making a ZS6 or a dipole or something, has worked so much better with the middle of the road type antennas that you go out and purchase, that I am a believer, and that is why I am here, and that is why I am fumbling by and helping Tom out, is because, you know,
And there, I'm done preaching for the night. 7-3 is all. Great Tech Tuesday, Tom. This WB6CLZ.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Appreciate that. Yeah, there's a lot that can be done. You know, like I said, if somebody can pick up a radio off of eBay or, you know, a yard sale or whatever you can do, and you're licensed to use that, you're in, you know, what we're going to do is let you use that to the utmost. You would be amazed at what you're going to talk out there. A lot of people have said, hey, well, I'm talking to Montana, you know, and I'm getting all the way over to Utah. I said, well, that's great, but you should be talking all the way over to Europe with the same power. So what's the problem? So it's not a problem. Is basically there's probably those little losses here and there, bad matchup, maybe just the bad way everything was kind of thrown together. It will work. Obviously, it will work. We're going to let you make it work the best. So turn the better into the best of the best. So appreciate everybody out there listening in. And if you need any comments to email me, go ahead, KF6Q, Kilo, Foxtrot, 6, Quebec. Well, don't spell that out. It won't go through. KF6Q. @ARRL.net, and answer questions, anything else for topics, feel free to go ahead. Or if Mike's still up and running with that, he's got WB6CLZ @ARRL.net. Either one of us, send it out, and we'll get it in interwoven with our Tech Tuesday. Let me reset. All right, and I will monitor a little bit after that. Appreciate everybody who's still out there listening. Appreciate all the people who have had comments and topic suggestions on there. Info, a lot of info. This is a group action, and we're just trying to pull all this together. This is what Mike and I do. So we're having a lot of fun, and if we can help you out, that's great. You know, it's fantastic. Arnie, QST, 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 this is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net. Closing the net at, I have no clue what time. Let's see here, what do we got? 2,000 hours and 27 minutes. Appreciate everybody for listening in. Please join us again. Tell your friends. We'll see you again next Tuesday. KF6Q, clear.